Hi, welcome again. This is Dr. Molina. Welcome to the Dr. Molina Show. I'm sorry I had a little transmission problem. Welcome to Resurrected, your healing potential. We've had a little change in venue this evening, and I would like to go ahead and address some questions regarding your body's ability to heal innately. In coming into the show, this particular show, the Dr. Molina Show, is about awakening the innate intelligence or the spirit physician within us all. What we need to be aware of is that healing is an inherent capacity of life itself. Our body has within it all the information needed to repair itself. As a matter of fact, the body does operate continuously and is always on call for the healing process. And healing is a natural tendency of our body. I've learned in dealing with my patients that we look for various avenues of healing. There's so many different faces of healing. And of the various people that I've interviewed on personal accounts on healing, I've had some unusual, delightful, some new age, some formable, intelligent, and very wide-ranging knowledge of individuals, as well as patients who give me their opinions on healing. Now, I believe we have a tendency to neglect things in our own backyard. And again, that's the body's innate ability to heal. And I'd like to discuss this with you this evening. Now, I'm not particularly talking about a spontaneous healing or that of which occurs with miraculous healings. However, while those are profound and those are certainly exceptions, but again, also a major fact in biology that the body has a natural healing system that each of one of us is born with. We call it the innate healing. We do want to talk about the ability to heal, to recognizing healing, and then being aware of how we ourselves can afford healing in one another. Now, one of the things I've noticed in working with my patients when they come into my practice is they have this need to know. It's a question that they need to know what's going on with them. And generally when I work with these particular patients, I'm just enamored by them because I love to educate. I love to talk to the patient to their level of understanding so they actually have informed consent and are aware how to take care of themselves, what a typical algorithm or treatment protocol would be, and answer any questions to the best of my ability. However, it's very difficult also with what I'm going to say as well, is that in my profession, I find that a lot of times what the physician will state can have very negative consequences on the patients. Simply put, we're a little bit pessimistic at times. So I will have patients who come to see me and they'll have been told by their doctors in one way or another, maybe not that they're not going to get better, but that they have to learn to live with their problems. Or perhaps that medicine, allopathic, traditional allopathic medicine, has nothing more to offer them. Now I see patients from all over the state, as well as I'm certainly blessed with I have those out-of-towners that come and see me. The vast majority of them will come in from conventional medicine or what we call traditional medicine. Most often will be referred by their family practitioner, which we will know, or internal medicine, which we would know as a primary care provider. And they will refer them a knee, a shoulder, an elbow, bring this patient over, or actual disease condition patient that they feel I may be able to help with. I find most often that the patient has to deal with one form of medical pessimism or another, and that certainly is where they feel that they've been told this is so, or that they have no immediate problems, or that they need to go into therapy, or that they have the condition, it'll never go away, or that conventional medicine can offer nothing to them. And on the other side of the coin, the patient often will complain about that the doctors didn't take enough time to answer questions. They just wanted to give me drugs. I don't want to take any more drugs. Or sadly enough, they even say that there's nothing more that they can do for me. Now, I've also heard the situation where the patients complain that they've said, the doctor has said, well, they've told me I've just had to live with it. So I find those last statements particularly disturbing because they do reflect a very deep-rooted pessimism about the human potential for innate healing. In a sense, it's as if we are putting hexes on the poor patient, or labeling. I always call it labeling. And a good example is cardiac cripples. Once a patient, now you have to remember my former training was as a paramedic, an EMS coordinator in the state of Nevada. And as I look at that background, most often when we educate the patient, it was in accordance to algorithms. It was treating within algorithms. If we would have these cardiac patients that would have chest pain, give the cardinal sign, which is the clenched fist, shortness of breath, nausea. Of course, as first responders, we knew what to do, what lifelines to hook up, what drugs to go on board or to inject or to the onboard term is to provide for the patient, to treat the patient with. But we also would transport them to the local emergency room where they would be admitted for a cardiac workup. And ultimately, I would even follow up on those patients once they got home. And I was surprised at that time to find out that the patient was labeled. Maybe they went into the emergency room and the EKG didn't show anything. There was no electrical cardiac disturbance on the EKG. The blood enzymes came back and they didn't show any markers to indicate that the heart tissue had been damaged. So those cardiac enzymes didn't elevate. But they came in complaining of, gee, sounds like, seems like, could be, the diagnosis is possible angina or myocardial infarction. Now the patient has a label of a cardiac event. Now the patient, when they go home, start taking things easy and they have a little bit of a fear of doing things because of the label. So in a sense, it's just as bad as being pessimistic or hexing the patient as it is labeling the patient. Labeling often, I call it medical labeling, often hampers the patients in their ability to heal because it places a mind-body implant on them to where they need to get over that metal imagery of not getting better and to having this potential life-threatening disease such as, you know, oh, I've had my first heart attack, my next one 6 months down the road. The patients that I deal with, I try to talk to them a little bit about the innate ability to heal. And, you know, I have many, many stories. Some stories are just so outrageous that all I can do is laugh. Generally, I find that when I get my patients to laugh, they do quite well. They do quite well. Now, when we're working with a biomedical model or the allopathic model, which is conventional medical theory in practice, you know, it's very, very difficult to present a system of healing. Fortunately, today, we do have the National Institute of Health trying to categorize the various disciplines, such as chiropractic, acupuncture, Ayurvedic medicine, mind-body, biofeedback, entities of this nature, alongside conventional or traditional allopathic medicine, which is drug medicine, or what we'd call surgery and drug medicine, pharmaceutical interventions. What is occurring is the National Institute of Health is providing for research, and we are having a lot of research centers, a lot of teaching institutions look into other methods of healthcare discipline. Not necessarily healing, but healthcare discipline and trying to determine any empirical evidence for it, any good clinical case studies, trying to afford funding that these case studies can go forward so we can document within these non-traditional arenas as far as their efficiency. But so the biomedical model, which is the conventional medical theory in practice, does not really look at a healing system in itself, and they certainly don't offer it to their doctors that are training. My experiences and my observations of healing have told me that there is various different complexes besides just the physical arena that need to be dealt with the patients. We have not only the mental realm, we have the emotional realm. We have emotional healing that we need to overcome. We have spiritual healing. We have mind-body interactions. And there's a very strong growing public interest in mind-body interactions. What we're looking at here is, for example, maybe we experience the hex, the pessimism, the label, and we can't get beyond that to get overcome that mental imagery that we can heal ourselves. In the medical model, the traditional medical model, we are looking at a surgical and pharmaceutical intervention arena. We are looking at a germ theory. We are looking at the basis of medicine to where there is a cause and an effect. For example, if you have a sore throat, it might be bacterial or viral in nature. The algorithm or the treatment protocol would include a throat culture swab to go ahead and maybe prophylactic antibiotics. This is, of course, after the examination. Run some routine laboratory to determine whether or not the immune system has been triggered, which are the white blood cells in our body. And to look at the disease focus, that's the whole medical inquiry for biomedical models. And this is what we have as the driving force in the United States. You know, the National Institutes of Health, now I did just state that they are assisting us in determining traditional, non-traditional medicine, contemporary medicine, alternative medicine. They are assisting putting research funds into, hopefully, the right hands to where we can determine the efficiency of those forms of medicine. Because, you know, it's a good thing they're doing it because for a number of years they used to be known as the National Institutes of Disease. Because here we have the Cancer Institute, the Infectious Disease Institute, falls under the umbrella of the National Institute of Health. But it used to be called, we used to say it was the National Institute of Disease. So where would we then be looking in the National Institute of Healing? And that's something that I have been looking at as early as 1996. I look for the research in the medical literature. I look for case reports, particularly when it comes to spontaneous remission with cancers, because as most of you know, I'm a former cancer patient, and I'm a cancer survivor, and the big C word doesn't bother me because one of the first things in the mental imagery that I had to, for my own healing, for mind-body medicine, is to lose any anxiety over the C word, to lose any anxiety over that label, and to take back my own healing capacity. So I was able to relinquish any anxiety I had over the pessimism or the label, and I was able to get on with the business at hand, which was preparing my own healing potential and awakening my innate. Because, again, you know, healing is a researchable phenomenon that we can see. Where I'm from in Alaska, we always have, we use the old folklore. We had a lot of dramatic events which helped us to heal. We had a lot of storytelling which would be handed down from one family to the next on what would be more efficient in healing the very sick. And most often we used a tremendous amount of herbs. We did not see in the traditional sense the medical allopathic doctor. We did not go to the hospital. We did not have x-rays. We basically had gone to healers. And at the very, very least of everything, we went ahead and did our home remedies. And a lot of it included herbal remedies. But today, in today's medicine, we seem to be immersed in a world of hospital medicine. And sadly enough, our interns, the externs, the residents, the fellows, they are all immersed as well. I recall one of the most horrific obstacles I had in my healing was being was going to a leading cancer institute because of the fellows, the interns, the residents, and the staff. There was no representative for healing. It was all illness. It was all, I was in this context of very sick people. And, you know, if you treat predominantly people, I suppose, with life-threatening crises and, you know, end-stage chronic diseases, naturally, you know, you would be pessimistic about the outcomes. And I think that's the basic fact of medical training. However, the sadly, it was just a horrendous experience having to deal with that, and I didn't deal with it quite well. As a matter of fact, what I had to do was to actually teach some of the residents about innate power of healing. I had to explain to them about their body's ability to heal using biology, and just bringing questions to them. And fortunately for me, I was completely blessed with remission, with spontaneous healing, and I am here today. And I think as a result of that, I not only share my experience, but also my being on that side of the bedpan, what my pathway was for healing and well-being. And it's something we know, it's something I research as a doctor. You know, I number one, the pessimism that you encounter, for example, with the big C word, whether it's cardiac or cancer, right, the big C word, there could be a psychological defense that you put there simply because of the fact that society has put it there. Please be aware it does impact you as a patient. We live in this uncertain universe, and we feel that we don't have controlling power over life or death, and most often we don't. But what we need to understand is that we do have a healing capacity, and the human organism can heal itself. This is a subject that's been proven in medicine. It's inherently comforting to the patient to be aware that we have innate ability to hear, to heal. For example, I often tell my patients, you know, we're sitting here and your heart's pumping. It has a certain automaticity, rhythmaticity that continues on its own without a single thought or action on your part. Thank goodness for that. We don't have to worry about our heart beating. If there's a problem with that, the body has enzymes that can repair damage to a structure, damage to a cell, and our body's innate healing ability will act upon those enzymes and have them come to the area to heal. Now, what happens is, for example, if we're dealing with a situation where we don't want to accept a doctor's prognosis, fine. Psychologically, we need to get over the label, the diagnosis, in other words, the diagnostic label that we have. We're more than labels, we're human beings. We need to use to focus our energy on healing so we can't have that psychological overlay bothering us and being in our way. We also need to get over the anxiety. And we also need to, thirdly, never accept a doctor's prognosis. Now, I'm saying that with a very light heart, a very light heart. You must search for healing. You must recognize that there are going to be, for many patients, there will be medical treatments that are necessary for the healing to occur. Because some patients are so weakened and are at such a point in their lives that they need to have traditional medicine at times. Sometimes they'll need to have the surgery. They need to have the drug therapy to simply get them to the point where their body can heal itself. It's not the drug that heals you. It's not the surgery that heals you. It is optimizing your healing ability, however. You're the only one that heals yourself. The patients are the only ones. So I like the patients that never accept the doctor's prognosis as the final word. I like the ones that research subjects by themselves. And I know what you're going to say. All my doctors that are listening out there are going to say, oh, not another patient searching the internet for medical information. Well, you need to search somewhere. It seems like the technology of the internet, for the good and the bad, there is a wonderful resource out there right in our living room to where we can become educated and we can get some answers. They may not be the right answers, but at least it will direct our line of thinking, our thought process, and where we need to go next. We can read a lot of things online as well. So what's interesting is most patients that come to me are aware of the fact that when we sit down and I perform a consultation with them and they tell me this medical, it's like a play. They're giving me all their surgeries, their diagnoses, their problems here, their problem there, and I have to say, what are you here for? Well, I'm here because I've never been to alternative medicine and I really don't feel like they can do anything else for me. Well, who do you mean by they? Well, my medical provider. And, you know, in fact, I may in fact know their medical provider. And I may think quite highly of that particular provider. But the patient is requiring and is requesting alternative care. So I'm certainly not going to one, jeopardize my relationship with their physician because I have to work with them. See, when we all work together in mutual harmony, then we do this for the benefit of the patient. And number two, the patient may need to return to the primary care, to that medical doctor for something. Maybe there was just a misunderstanding or whatever. Never burn the bridges. Never burn the medical bridges. That's my rule. My purpose, however, is to teach the patient that this healing ability may be very difficult for them to see when they're in the doorway of conventional medicine. Because its existence isn't as clear. Now, certainly when we are with an alternative or a contemporary practitioner, when we're receiving our acupuncture or massage or things of this nature, it might be a little bit more apparent because we're able to discuss things of this nature. It's accepted more readily. But my whole purpose tonight is to advise the patients that our body has an innate potential for maintaining health and overcoming illness. The human body, the human organism, well, it is dauntingly complex, but it has an ability to repair itself, and that's one of its most complex, fascinating functions. As we spoke briefly about the mind-body interaction, it's an important tool. Get over the anxiety of the illness. Never take the medical practitioner's prognosis as the final say. Research, become an informed patient. Also, recognize that you are the healer. You are the spirit physician. You have to turn on those tools for healing, and you need to optimize its potential. Now, you know, it's difficult for me to give you an actual model and then have a you know, integrate this into any type of a biological reality. However, I can tell you a few things, and some of the things that I'm aware of is simply what defines life itself, and that's the study of biology, that's the DNA molecule. And the DNA is a double-stranded helix that takes the same form in all organisms, from human beings to viruses, I don't care what it is. It's a huge molecule, double helix structure. It basically has two chains of sugar molecules kind of twisting, like a pretzel, twisting around one another. And you could actually say it's like a ladder, and it's a twisted ladder, because there's the little rungs of the ladder is what links those two chains together. Now, when we're looking at the DNA, we know that DNA can replicate itself and pass on genetic information from one cell to another and one generation to the next. Our DNA can also transcribe, much like a court transcriptionist, you know, that we can have a transcription of information into another molecule that will basically determine the structure and the function of organisms. So DNA, you know, the wonderful processes, replication, transcription, and translation of genetic information, these are basic processes of human life. And if we are looking at an individual's susceptibility to an injury or to a particular disease, I always like to obtain a very complete, complex social history from my patient. I would like to know, where did you work? Where were you born? Where did you travel? I would like to know any exposure that this patient may have had, because, you know, if we have damage to our DNA, it can have horrible consequences for not only the organism, but of course our offspring as well. So the body, while it can repair itself as long as it isn't completely, both sides of the ladder, vertical lines of that ladder, as long as both vertical lines are not disrupted. If we lose one side of the ladder, it's okay, but if both are gone, then we've destroyed some of our DNA, and that process, the replication, transcription, translation, we're going to have problems with that. But all of this is directed by someone who directs an orchestra. The maestro comes in, and I had an Italian patient once. He always called it maestro, so I'm going to call it maestro. They come in, and they are directing the orchestra. Well, that's what enzymes do. Enzymes are very special classes of proteins that repair. Your heart, for example, if you're, we brought up heart attacks, you know, myocardial infarction, angina, your heart, if it's injured from the inside, the cardiac enzymes will be elevating. This is what they're testing for when you go to the emergency room to rule out a heart attack of cardiac origin, because a heart attack may not be a heart attack, right? It might be indigestion, might be pleurisy, might be a host of other things, might be a rib sprain. Nevertheless, these enzymes are what we are looking for to see if there's injury, because they come to the area for reparative processes. So enzymes in most organs will be elevated if there's trauma from the inside out. Now, from the outside in, let's say somebody hits you in the chest with a, let's say you're driving, you're in a car accident, and the steering wheel impacts onto your chest. For direct trauma, that will not only hurt your chest, but it will hurt your heart, because you've got a possibility of a contusion to the heart. That may elevate the enzymes as well. So, we need to learn more about these enzymes, and our knowledge of them is expanding just tremendously. But enzymes are fascinating, because as a biochem major, I learned that enzymes catalyze all the chemical reactions of life. So that was the little Bunsen burner. You know, it would feed the reaction from the left to the right and make it accelerate at a faster rate. So I teach my patients about enzymes. And one of the ways I teach them about enzymes is, of course, with their diet. And we'll save that for a little bit later in the program. But when we are explaining how the body has an innate healing structure, it is available from our DNA. So our basic activities of our own healing system has got to be, you know, at the micro level, say the micro macro molecules, it's got to be this interface between the body's innate ability to heal, between our lymphatic system, our organisms, our cellular systems, our macromolecules, where we have the nerves now, the central nervous system directing everything, the enzymes repairing the process without having to know more about the details of self-repairing with the DNA, we know that This is not specifically the immune system. This is not an organ system turning on, such as the immune system, to do the reparative process. This is below the, well, we can say it below the cellular level. This is at the level of the DNA. This is what is in our body. This is the healing system that we have. And I think it has to do from the DNA. And there's so much that we've, to date, we don't know about this. But in chiropractic, we have a saying where the body that made the body, the power that made the body heals the body, or upside down, inside out. Chiropractors have long believed, as the basic philosophical tenets of their practice, that the central nervous system, or the nervous system, assists the innate healing process, or the innate. We've always believed in an innate intelligence that directs our healing. We believe that the information highway, in this case, is through the nervous system. The DOs, osteopaths, under Dr., I believe it was Andrew Stills, their founder, believed it was the blood system, the circulatory system. And now the DOs are part of the American Medical Association. They actually joined and became a limited profession, I think the 80s, maybe the early 1970s. So they are a limited profession where they're not practicing in all states and all emergency rooms, but they still hold on to some of their philosophical tenets, but most of them are in contemporary medicine these days. Nevertheless, this innate intelligence is, we believe, in chiropractic, governed by the nervous system, because the nervous system is the information highway. The nervous system has to speak to not so much enzymes in the body, but it has to speak to chemical messengers. Chemical messengers, a.k.a. hormones, a.k.a. catecholamines, minerals, things of this nature, are going to assist the body in healing, or to direct a particular chemical process that the body then will repair itself. So we may not understand that. So basically, what I'd like the listening audience to look at this evening is that at the level of DNA, we do have a healing system. At the cellular level, we have a wonderful healing capacity. We see it all the time for regeneration. We look at the cuts that we make on ourselves. Let's look at a wound. If we take a look at the wound, we know, of course, that it hurts. But, you know, pain will subside. And it simply hurts because there's periphery of nerves around the area that tells your brain about the injury. But, you know, the bleeding will stop, you'll form a clot, and then that'll get a nice little scab over. If you're attentive, you'll see around that scab, you'll get a bit of an inflammation, a bit of a reddening. And that's okay. You know, this is the immune system response, your immune system response at a cellular level, which is where when the white blood cells will come in to defend the area, is what I say, to defend the area against the entrance of germs, and also to clear up or clean up the debris. I call it the tissue debris. But basically, it's clearing the area of the dead cell. Because remember, you scabbed over. And so we're allowing new cellular process to occur. So we're allowing new skin cells to formulate. And then the wound closes, and it's a miracle. How did we heal? We healed by an innate process. We have something in our body that will synthesize proteins to allow our bodies to granulate, to have fibroblasts, to form newly forming blood vessels, and therefore to make new skin occur. And that wound that may have been deep will no longer be as deep, and it will be just as good as new. So some of the things that we're looking at in medicine is, of course, the study of wound healing, and that's just a very simplistic way of looking at it. But a lot of study has gone on with that. And we're talking about healing this evening and the ability of the human patient to optimize healing potential. We will look at different areas of the body and recognize that, you know, we can also have restoration of structure and function occurring in organ systems, even after partial destruction. And let's just take a look at liver cells. Liver cells will regenerate. If they've been damaged by, let's say, hepatitis or chemical, pharmaceutical toxins, things of this nature, recreational toxins, any toxicity to the liver that exceeds the cytochrome P450 detoxification natural pathway of the liver, anything that exceeds the liver's ability to detoxify on its own will become toxic, because that's what the liver does. The liver first in its detoxification pathway will have to break things apart. Now, when they're together, they're bonded together, they're stable. When we break them apart, they're unstable, hence they're toxic. So if we, pardon the expression, put more in than we can detoxify out, then we have a problem and the liver may end up a little toxic. So, for example, the hepatitis. We do have the ability to restore those liver cells. So there's many organs of the body that can regenerate. So now that we've discussed a little bit of this, I think you should know the intent here. The intent is that the patients I've seen, and I've seen equally rapid and dramatic responses in patients with many kinds of illnesses that have just simply said, I've had enough. I'm just going to stop this way of living, and I'm going to practice this and switch to a particular lifestyle that will promote natural healing. Many, many patients. And the outcome has been phenomenal. So I'm not unconvinced that we do not have an innate intelligence that heals our healing and regenerates our bodies, and that we all have the capacity. Now, there's a process of my brother-in-law is a psychologist, and there is a process where if we look at healing with using grief as a model, grief is a huge loss. It's universally accepted that it could be the loss of a pet, a job, a relationship. And grieving is, you know, something, it's accepted in the United States. We're required to do it. But grieving should be a process of healing. But in fact, emotionally, it can be charged with the inability or obstacles to healing. So my brother-in-law, for example, will work with grieving clients. And rather than look at the stages such as shock and denial and things of this nature, he actually talks and listens and he looks at it as if it's an illness. And it's, well, he recognizes that as a progressive stage, it's still an illness which can become an obstacle to the spirit and to the emotion, and maybe inappropriate emotional behavior will be incurred as a result, and perhaps the inappropriate emotional delay to healing can occur. So I think it's interesting to understand that there are limits to the ability for the body to heal. There are limits for us to recover from life-threatening illnesses. But I believe that the limits are our own, and that if this type of healing can happen in one human being, I believe it can happen in all human beings. And the research is out there where we're looking into spontaneous remissions. And you certainly don't have to have a cancer to jump on the bandwagon of learning about healing the body. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm simply talking about, for example, let's see. One of my patients came in and was asked to undergo a surgery. Said, well, no, actually was told may possibly need a surgery because they had a problem with a ulcerative colitis. They'd been tested for an infectious disease, which is a bacterium, Helicobacter pylori, that can cause, you know, irritation of the stomach and duodenum, and that can, of course, cause a colitis or at least ulcers in some cases. So she was checked for all that, and she had her imaging, her diagnostic studies, and things of this nature. But she did not want to undergo a potential for a surgery. And he told her, well, I'm going to see you back in 3 months. If it's not any better, we'll do surgery. So she basically did not want to have a surgery. Now, I'm here to tell you, that's what healed her. The fact that she doesn't want to have the surgery, that's what healed her. She researched, she studied, we had several talks about mind-body interactions, particularly in America. She was Cubano. She was a little bit of a different ethnic culture there, and we see a difference in healing, a difference in spirituality and emotional factors as well with our different ethnic cultures, and we should be responsible to them and be aware of these differences. So I was delighted to see that she utilized everything we discussed so that instead of just prescribing drugs or using drugs to suppress symptoms, she actually involved herself with meditation, with prayer, with mind-body approaches. She changed her diet, of course. She facilitated her ability to heal. Yeah, and I'm not a researcher. All I know is when she went back to her medical provider, he retested and completed some diagnostics and said, hey, you don't need it. You don't need to have surgery. So she was tickled pink. And this particular patient of mine had just gone overseas as well, and she went to Rome, and she came back with the loveliest, loveliest gift for me as a result of that special healing. To this day, I keep telling her, you did it. It was because of the fact that your doctor told you you were going to have this, and you refused it, so you enhanced your ability to heal. Now, there is a role of the mind in healing, obviously. So I think what's important is, as we discuss this, we need to recognize when we have a life-threatening illness for which conventional medicine doesn't have an effective treatment, you know, it takes a conscious effort to get services that we require. So the patient has to be informed consent. True informed consent to me is explaining to the patient the different avenues of treatment. I didn't say healing, I said treatment. The different avenues that are available, whether it is alternative or traditional. And I'll discuss all of them. But gee, you're not a surgeon, Dr. Molina. Well, that's correct. I'm not a surgeon. But if I have a patient comes in, we have a herniated disc, for example, and I've quantified it on an MRI, I can tell the patient what the medical algorithm is. Absolutely. I think I would be negligent unless I failed to inform, if I failed to inform them. I will discuss with them, this is the algorithm. Conservative care, physical therapy, chiropractic care, prescription therapy, pain medications, after the 4 to 6 weeks of that, if it still fails to assist your problem, you can look at epidurals. We discuss what epidurals are. If that fails to assist your problem, then we can go see an orthopedist. The orthopedist then will want to see your MRI and all your x-rays, may take some more and give you an idea for some surgery, particularly as it relates to a discectomy. Now, if we want to talk pain management, I do non-invasive pain management, but my pain management providers that do the drug therapy interventions, they may want to do something a little bit more sophisticated than an epidural. In that case, I'll let them discuss that. But the whole idea is treatment. So I have to also inform alternatives such as acupuncture, Ayurvedic medicine, I like to inform them on biofeedback, certain body works, in a sense, which is massage. Body work is massage therapy. Traditional Chinese medicine as well. Chiropractic care, herbal medicine, homeopathy. I like to bring other alternatives to them. Chiropractic in itself is, as I stated, very much inclined to dealing with the innate potential and optimizing the healing ability of the patient. It always has been. It's always been a basic philosophical tenet, and I think that's why we've been the most understood. However, for some reason, we seem to be into this neck and back arena that medicine has put us into, and I don't understand why. A chiropractic treatment can not only be helpful in mechanical pain or musculoskeletal pain and tension headaches or post-trauma, but it's equally effective with chronic pain syndromes. It's equally effective with weight loss management. It's equally effective with carpal tunnel syndrome. It's equally effective with lowering blood pressure, treating diabetes. And so I don't understand where this came from. Most chiropractors are naturopaths. But then again, because of the licensing of naturopathy in the United States, once it was in and then it was out, that's because our medical doctors started signing the certificates for the naturopathic physicians, and all of a sudden we don't have any naturopathics anymore. They're coming back again, and there's starting to be regulation of licensure and things of this nature, but most older chiropractors are basically naturopaths, and they actually have degrees in naturopathy. It's not a mail-order degree, okay? It's not something we pay for. Chiropractic is a five-year program after your four-year undergraduate. So we are trained to deal with the patient. According to the Harvard Learning-Based Method, we are trained to teach the patient to deal with the patient's treatment. How do we treat them? Are we going to deal with acupuncture, herbs, natural body-based medicine, massage, chiropractic adjustments to free up fixation? Are we going to take advantage of the body's natural healing capacity to avoid the drugs and surgery of conventional medicine? Absolutely. So this is what I don't understand. Why people make chiropractors neck and back. You know, go to a chiropractor that's been educated after about 94, although there's a lot of older chiropractors that are marvelous out there, and just find out what they do. And if they're neck and back doctors, then, you know, if you don't want to be there, go to one who's more natural. Now, when we're dealing with healing as well. Now, there is a hands-on religious healing practice, which I think they clearly activate healing responses. I don't think they cause any harm whatsoever. I think they should be used as adjunctive treatments, and I think that power of prayer is very, very successful. But when I treat patients, I said treat, not heal. When I treat, because that's all I do, when I treat my patients, I try to educate them, and I never take no for an answer, because I know one day, sooner or later, what I say with my years of experience will hit home to these patients. Maybe they don't buy it at the time, but you know what? They will later, or they'll be able to pass it on. I always recognize that I will never give up hope when there's help that can be found. I never, ever give up hope on my patients. Now, I've had patients with chronic autoimmune system diseases. I've had patients with cancer, multiple sclerosis, thyroid disorders. You know, I've had a wealth of patients. The most successful, and it's a very successful innate healing ability, is for a patient to search out possibilities of treatments and cures. So, to be an informed patient, you have to have somebody out there informing you, right? Most often, my patients will come to me for the information. However, I actively engage every patient who is labeled, has a condition, has a disorder, to ask questions, read books about it, ask their friends, meet with other practitioners to find out what this is. Sometimes, you know, people will have a certain behavior that maybe a doctor will label. You know, it might be a mislabel. Maybe we have a hypothyroid patient. No one's investigated their thyroid problem, and they've been labeled as a depressed patient. Well, that goes with hypothyroidism, but maybe the doctor wasn't trained on that symptom and neglected to take a blood study because they didn't see it. So there may have been a misdiagnosis. The patient was certainly depressed. Perhaps we missed the elusive original diagnosis. But the bottom line is, patient needs to be an active player. The patient, to optimize any healing potential, has got to ask questions, has got to seek out. And you know what? When you're looking at ways to optimize your healing potential, I think it's so important. And remember I said number one importance was get over the pessimism, the stigmatism of having that label, of having that disorder. Find someone else who's had the same problem that you do, and they're healed. Go talk to them. And whenever I run across someone that's had a serious health problem and, you know, it's turned around, you know, I do ask permission. I say, can I have one of my patients call you or talk to you? Most often these folks make conscious efforts to talk to my patients. And so because there's a lot of ups and downs, emotional ups and downs. So I think we have to make a conscientious effort to reach out to one another here. I had a patient once that I had, he healed from esophageal cancer, and that's a nasty cancer. Never stopped smoking, bless his heart, I tell you. But he healed from an esophageal cancer, the patient had problems as a result of close collimation radiation in his upper back. It burns the area, and the tissue that, you know, you're trying to rejuvenate takes a long time to heal because cancer as a chemotoxic agent is a whole body, potentially life-absorbing chemical, where it weakens everything. It's trying to do battle with the cancer cells. Unfortunately, it takes a lot of other things along with it. But this particular patient, just the toughest battle is the pain. He just had the pain from the close collimation radiation. We really taught a lot early on. We taught a lot about non-traditional or alternative medicine. And he really was a proponent of my sending patients too. Because, you know, he helped convince patients that they could modify their disease without depending on drugs. So he really was a starting point to get them on the road to healing. So, you know, find others that have been healed. Seek out their company. And this is why I like the power of prayer. This is why I like hands-on, too, because it's an emotional roller coaster, and we're being buffered. You know, we have little buffers. So we should seek that out for our emotional healing. We also want to neutralize, remember, the pessimism from our friends, our family, our neighbors, or from even our physicians. We want to neutralize the medical pessimism that we may have encountered of, oh, I can't help you anymore, or there's no cure, or nothing else I can do for you, or this is life-threatening illness, you've got 11 months to live, which was my situation. So you have to do that. You also have to form a very strong partnership with health professionals. And my patients I treat as family. You know, I think good doctors are always willing to say, gee, I don't know, but I'll find out. And I hope to God I'm a good doctor because that's what I do. And I'll go the second step to maybe email and take care of answering those questions if I haven't answered it on the first or second visit. Patients, you must make some major lifestyle changes. And I know it's difficult, and change is always difficult, but the patients that I typically do not treat are the ones that I come right out and say, you know, I know that change is difficult. I know I've made these recommendations because I want you to have optimum healing. But I also know that you and I have this contract together. And it doesn't appear that you're willing to uphold this side of the contract. Now, is it something that I have not explained to you? Did I not make it easy? What are the issues? What are the conflicts? What are the questions? Maybe we can work through it. If the patient and I can't work through it, I'm not doing them any good. I will try to refer them to another health professional, and they can maybe have a better constructive partnership with them. One of the things also with any type of illness or condition or the labeling, as I said, you know what? Just treat it as if it's the best thing that happens to you, because it should motivate you to make a change. It should motivate you to see this as, well, for me, I saw it just as an inconvenience, because I'm always busy, 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 on the go, and it just got in my way. I had no time for this, so it's just an inconvenience. But I started recognizing that once I saw this condition that I had as something that I could grow from and learn how to treat my patients with, I looked at it as a gift. As a gift, because I think it allows me to work better with people, to listen better. It's a gift because it allows me to have a better spiritual relationship in my life, and to accept things in life as well. So I think, you know, with all of our our imperfections, or I guess if you want to call it deficits, you know, every human being has characteristic traits that, you know, we're going to have our imperfections. That's the whole idea of humanity. What a wonderful universe it is. When you're sick or you're not feeling well, you know, acceptance doesn't mean giving up. Always have hope. Always have hope, and always be aware that we are, at this present sickness, we're able to allow our body to heal. Now, on August 7th, 2006, I'm going to discuss in greater detail optimizing healing potential, how we can use certain ways of improving our optimum health. What we can do, such as meditation, prayer, imagery, listening to tapes, such as eliminating allergies, specific dietary modifications, herbal medicines, most of the things that are unknown to conventional doctors. You know, a dietary modification, that's one of the first things I look at, because I try to reduce allergic responses. And I, of course, on the other hand, when a patient's trying to heal, I don't want them to starve themselves. So diet is not the time. But, well, we're always running out of time. This is Dr. Nancy Molina, and I am available for questions. I'm also available for email. I have Monday talk shows. Dr. Molina's show is based on a spirit physician within us all, and having the innate ability to heal ourselves. Join me next week, August 7th, when we talk about the innate ability to heal and the processes that we must go through to heal ourselves. I'm Dr. Nancy Molina. My practice is in San Juan Capistrano, and I have another practice in Laguna Hills, California. And you can find me on the website. Just put in Nancy Molina or contact me through BBS Radio Talk Show. That's bbsradio.com, Dr. Molina. And have a pleasant evening, and bless.